These provocations trample upon and present an enormous global threat.
More harsh words and calls for action against North Korea. It's Wednesday, May 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online right now, too, on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Antarctica may be the next destination for resources. Local elections in Cambodia carry national implications. Rescuing a special pig, in the movies that is, oral exercise, and body art you can hear. Hear it all now on VOA Asia. China's United Nations ambassador called Tuesday for the full implementation of existing Security Council resolutions on North Korea, while simultaneously de-escalating tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Ambassador Liu Jae-yi told reporters after a closed-door emergency session on the DPRK following Sunday's missile launch that China and the United States are discussing possible new sanctions. He also urged trying to achieve denuclearization through dialogue by political and diplomatic means. The Security Council strongly condemned the May 21st launch in a statement, pledging to take further significant measures, including sanctions, in line with the Council's previously expressed determination. Japan's United Nations Ambassador Koro Beso, whose government requested Tuesday's meeting along with the United States and South Korea, told reporters the launch was a blatant violation of existing Council resolutions.
The North Korea's official media has mentioned that, I quote, the deployment of this weapon system for action, unquote, and that, quote again, this type of missile should be rapidly mass-produced and in a serial way, unquote. These provocations trample upon international efforts towards the peaceful solution of nuclear and missile issues and present an enormous global threat.
Sunday's missile launch was Pyongyang's second in as many weeks and its 10th this year. The North has said it aims to produce the capability of mounting a nuclear warhead on an intercontinental ballistic missile. Tufts University Korean analyst Sung-Yoon Lee tells VOA's Victor Beatty such international statements of concern over North Korean testing have been going on for the past 25 years.
The fallout from such condemnation by the international community, in my view, does not compare to the strategic advantage gained by North Korea from continued provocations, weapons tests, and its enhanced capability to be a factor to be able to threaten the region and the United States. So, simply put, I see no reason that North Korea would stop its course of action.
Will sanctions make a difference?
Eventually. But I think a lot of people have the misconception that if you turn on sanctions, there should be either immediate results or sanctions are ineffective. It doesn't work that way. Like domestic law enforcement going after criminal activities, gangs, and so on, sanctions take uniform enforcement. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of time. You will not see any positive change in the first year or even longer, unless the international community is committed to enforcing sanctions to the best of their ability. And in the past, when it comes to North Korea sanctions, everyone is guilty of lackadaisical non-enforcement, including the United States and South Korea.
Pyongyang on Monday said it successfully tested what it called an intermediate-range ballistic missile, meeting all technical requirements and could now be mass-produced and deployed for the military.
North Korea has made strides over the past few years on its nuclear and missile capabilities, and that test, the Hwasong test, on May 14th, followed up by yesterday's test or Sunday's test on May 21st of a different kind of missile, I think those two tests speak volumes. North Korea is very close to a capable ICBM test, and it's really no time to continue to downplay the growing North Korea threat.
Sung-Yoon Lee said North Korea's latest missile test coincided with President Donald Trump's first foreign trip, much like the test it conducted in April 2009, when then-President Barack Obama appealed for a world without nuclear weapons in Prague. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on voanews.com. Top U.S. intelligence official says North Korea on trajectory to nuclear-armed missile. Hopes growing China may ease informal South Korea sanctions. Hospital bombing coincides with Thai military rule anniversary. Gay men publicly caned in Indonesia. Computer beats Chinese champion in ancient board game of Go. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. At an international meeting on Antarctica that runs through June the 1st in Beijing, a senior Chinese official called for a proper balance between economic interests and environmental concerns. Some 400 delegates from 42 nations and 10 international organizations meet annually to review a 1959 treaty that governs human activity on Antarctica. China has shown a growing interest in the sparsely populated snow and ice-covered continent at the bottom of the world that has raised some concerns it could begin exploiting Antarctica for its potentially vast natural resources. China's deputy head of the State of Oceanic Administration appeared to leave the door open, saying that at this stage, China expeditions and research focus on better understanding Antarctica and conserving its environment. Mark Letang, a China foreign policy analyst at New Zealand's Massey College in Auckland, spoke with VOA's Victor Beattie about China's interest.
The Antarctic Treaty System is quite old. The original treaty was signed in the late 1950s. And there was an addendum to that treaty signed in 1998, the Madrid Protocol. And long story short, what that means is that all signatories to that have to promise that they will not engage in any resource extraction activities for 50 years hence. So in other words, until 2048. So China's the signatory. China has expressed its support for the treaty system many times, including at this conference. However, there is a bit of wiggle room. There's a bit of hedging inherent in some of the statements that we've heard so far, because after 2048, the treaty comes up for review. And if for whatever reason the treaty is not renewed, all of a sudden the continent may be forced open to all kinds of potential mining, oil and gas drilling, and so forth. So there's quite a bit of long-term thinking going on. The other point is that China is a relative newcomer. Compared to the U.S., Russia, Europe, China's Antarctic activities really only started to accelerate over the past decade. So it's had to play a lot of catch-up in terms of gathering information, in terms of calling for scientific partnership. So this meeting is very important for the Xi government in order to, first of all, show off China's Antarctic interests and polar interests, but also, as you say, to assure the international community that China's not seeking to behave in any kind of revisionist fashion.
Lantane says the resources from Antarctica could be significant for the Chinese. They just need to know how much and where to look.
It is possible that there's a significant amount of mineral wealth, so base and precious metals. There's also the possibility of oil and gas deposits there, but without any kind of formal survey, it's basically estimating. But the concern is that if there is a situation whereby the continent is open to this kind of activity, China does not want to be shut out. Also, I should add that China has really made up for lost time. It has four research bases on the continent. Number five is expected to open pretty soon, probably early next year, in the Ross Sea. China's also testing a fixed-wing aircraft. It's also interested in building a runway on one of its research bases. It's definitely accelerated its projects, and it's also really been stressing that it wants to cooperate with some of the other major Arctic players, like Australia, like potentially Russia.
Mark Lantane said by hosting the 40th annual meeting on Antarctica, coupled with the uncertain future of U.S. participation in environmental cooperation policy, China finds itself in the unusual position of being the major power in such cooperation efforts like the Paris agreements on climate change. Our thanks to VOA's Victor Beatty for mining the resources for this story. Happening now in Asia, Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has declared martial law for 60 days in a southern province of the nation in response to fighting with militants linked to Islamic State. Fighting has raged between Philippine troops and militants in the hunt for the Philippine head of the Islamic State group. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks so much for listening. You know, there's an old saying that during elections, all politics are local, meaning if specific issues are very important to you, you will likely vote for the candidate that has pledged to do things beneficial to your concerns. Well, Cambodians will do just that early next month as they go to the polls to elect more than 12,000 district officials, including commune chiefs and district councilors. The elections will be contested by 12 political parties. Now, although local, the ballot is also shaping up as a showdown between the two major national parties amid threats of civil war and a crackdown on political dissent in the lead-up to national elections, which are slated for the middle of next year. For Prime Minister Hun Sen and his Cambodian People's Party, CPP, the communal poll on June 4th will provide an important litmus test of their popularity, which has been under some stiff pressure from a burgeoning youth vote and changing attitudes. As campaigning got underway, government spokesman Faye Sifan said these commune elections would cement a culture of pluralism at the local level and ensure Cambodia's status as an open society. Still, he acknowledged the polls would be fought on more mundane, everyday issues.
Accordingly, middle class has been expanded. The people they do have clean water, electricity, school, health. Of course, it's not enough, but it is improved from year to year. We have a middle class with grow.
Supporters of the opposition Cambodia National Rescue Party, or CNRP, have been buoyed by the fact that their party standing at national elections in 2013, when the ruling CPP was returned to power, its majority was reduced to 68 seats from 90 in the 123-seat National Assembly. The CNRP scored 55 seats, annihilating all the smaller parties in its path, after Cambodia's youth sided with the opposition and demanded change. More than 70% of this country's population is under the age of 30. That's a legacy of a post-war baby boom. And there are significant differences between young and old voters. Older voters are attracted to the security provided by the ruling CPP, which ended the wars in 1998 and ensured a peace that has enabled some economic growth. Sean Chahe, a senior CNRP figure, wants to see the gains from 2013 reflected at the commune level. He says commune elections are notoriously difficult to predict, and he declined to put a figure on just how many seats on district councils he expects the CNRP to win.
As you know, we have encountered so many threats, starting from the threat of war. We do not know how serious this kind of intimidation will affect the people's ability to vote freely. We really hope that there is no more intimidation, no more cheating, hoping that when we come to vote, people will be able to vote and the counting of the ballot would be done in a proper manner.
The local nature of these elections has not stopped Hun Sen from weighing in at the national level, warning Cambodia could return to war if the CPP was to lose. Politics also has been marred by the beating of opposition parliamentarians, criminalization of defamation laws, and banning anyone with a criminal conviction from contesting elections. Defamation suits and the constant threat of prison prompted opposition leader Sam Rainsy to resign and return to self-imposed exile in France, with his deputy Kem Sokha taking up the leadership role of the CNRP. Hun Sen has also curtailed political street rallies. The U.S. State Department has called on the government to avoid threats and political intimidation, but hopes are high that there will be no repeat of the violence that followed the 2013 general election, when at least 5 people were killed. Our thanks to Luke Hunt in Phnom Penh for sending us this story. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Indian Army says it has hit army posts in Pakistani Kashmir that were providing cover for militants planning to cross into the Indian side of the disputed Himalayan territory. India has long accused Pakistan of supporting Islamic terror groups. Pakistan denies it. All the big stories are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, we consider a new film from South Korean director Bong Joon-ho. It tells the story of a young girl who risks everything to rescue her pet, a genetically modified pig produced by a huge multinational corporation. VOA Asia's David Byrd tells us about Okja, which stars Tilda Swinton and Jake Gyllenhaal, Paul Dano, and Lily Collins.
Mija lives with her grandfather in an idyllic village in South Korea. All her life, she has had a special friend, Okja, a genetically modified pig who was created by the bioengineering company, the Mirando Corporation. Mija's grandfather is one of several farmers who received baby pigs with an agreement that in 10 years the animals would be gathered for a beauty pageant in New York. But that beauty pageant has a sinister side. Mirando Corporation is in the food business, after all, as CEO Lucy Mirando, played by Tilda Swinton, reminds us.
Our super pigs will not only be big and beautiful, they will also leave a minimal footprint on the environment, consume less feed, and produce less excretions. And most importantly, they need to taste good.
Unaware of her grandfather's arrangement, Mija, played by South Korean Seo Hyun An, has a special friendship with Okja, the pig who looks like a cross between a hog and a hippo. When the Mirando Corporation comes to collect Okja, Mija sets off on a quest to recapture her beloved pet. She finds help from the Animal Liberation Front, an activist group headed by Jay, who's played by Paul Dano. The film was screened at the Cannes Film Festival, and audience members booed the Netflix logo when it appeared. And the film had to be restarted because of a technical glitch. However, the audience was eventually clapping once the film was shown. Director Bong Joon-ho said at the post-screening news conference that Netflix gave him what he needed, including the artistic freedom to make the film he wanted to make.
In fact, I loved working with Netflix. They gave me great support. The budget for the film is considerable. Giving such a budget to a director isn't very common, and I had total liberty. It was a wonderful experience. I'm saying that in terms of the shooting and editing. They never intervened. They truly respected me from beginning to end.
The film also generated debate because of its portrayal of the ALF, which has been accused of engaging in and failing to criticize violent protests performed in its name. Paul Dano says that the film tries to show how both sides, the ALF and the food industry, are maniacally committed to their causes.
But I think one of the interesting things about the film is that both the good and bad sides are so committed to their own cause, it's sort of their own downfall. So even though the ALF is heroic in my eyes in this film because we try to help the girl and her pig, we make our own errors due to our utter commitment to our causes.
The film also was controversial because Spanish director and Cannes Film Festival jury president Pedro Almodovar said that streaming-only movies should not win the festival's top prize, the Golden Palm. Tilda Swinton said at the Okja screening news conference that they brought the movie to Cannes so it could be seen, not to win prizes.
But the truth is, we didn't actually come here for prizes. We came here to show this film to the Cannes Film Festival and to people who have gathered here from all over the world. And it is true, we get the wonderful opportunity and privilege to screen our film on that screen. But the truth is, if you want to know what I really think, I think, as in many matters, there is room for everybody.
Okja will stream on Netflix beginning June 28th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Developing at this hour in Asia, about 40,000 student and exchange visitors overstayed their visas last year in the United States, the largest group of visitors who failed to leave the country on time, according to a Department of Homeland Security report. It found 629,000 visitors out of 50 million did not leave by the time their visas expired. Your visit time to VOA Asia Facebook has no expiration. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the positive impact of exercise is old news. There really is no downside, mentally or physically, to getting up and moving around in any form, from taking walks to lifting weights. VOA's Kevin Enix is wondering, along with the rest of us, if a pill could give you all those benefits.
People exercise for all kinds of reasons. Most of them center around looking good and feeling well. Exercise benefits more than just muscles. The whole body, the brain, the cardiovascular structure, almost everything benefits. But one of the big things exercise does is teach the body to burn fat instead of sugar.
The program that we study is increasing burning of fat and burning less sugar. That leaves more sugar for the brain, and it keeps the brain going. So endurance is about keeping the brain on.
In a new paper, scientists have found a chemical compound that can reprogram a mouse to choose fat over sugar as an energy source at the genetic level.
And so you can keep going on fat for a long time as long as you can keep the sugar going to the brain. And so the secret is how to reprogram that. It's promoting something, which is burning fat, and inhibiting something, which is burning sugar. And so that's what training does. Our pill does that without training.
If it works in humans, it could provide some of the same health benefits that regular exercise does, without the movement. This could be a big help for people who are unable to exercise. But it is not a cure-all. It does not do any of the good things that aerobic exercise does.
With the pill, you get all this benefit, and you have not improved your blood supply. You haven't changed your heart function. And so it means that endurance to us is about the brain. It's about keeping the brain going. If you keep your brain going, you're going to keep running.
In mice, the pill greatly increased their endurance and improved their general health. The team is hoping to see the same results in human tests that could begin in 6 months. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
Once a social taboo in many places, tattoos are now widely popular. Now listen up, literally. A tattoo artist in California has created a tattoo that also produces sound. Artist Nate Sigurd inks audio sound waves onto the skin that makes it possible to hear music or someone's voice by using a smartphone app. VOA's Deborah Block explains how he does it.
Not only is this woman's dog howling, but so is the waveform tattoo that she is listening to on her smartphone. Tattoo artist Nate Sigurd calls his audible body art sound wave tattoo.
Actually, what we're doing with the sound wave tattoo is we're using image recognition inside of the app to notice when it's looking at the tattoo, and then it plays the sound of the tattoo back on top of itself.
Up to a minute of sound can be recorded and uploaded to the smartphone app, which generates a waveform that can be inked on a tattoo. Once the tattoo is finished, a photo of it is uploaded to the app and matched to the audio file. When someone points at the tattoo, the audio file plays.
I love you.
Sigurd's friend Josh Gallner wanted a sound wave tattoo in memory of his father who died from cancer. Here, his dad's voice leaves a message to others who have the disease.
You absolutely have to believe. And once you have that belief and that desire, you can conquer anything.
Sigurd wants to establish a network of trained sound wave tattoo artists all over the world, so people can not only see their tattoo, but listen to it too. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Perhaps you can tattoo our program. Well, maybe not. But we thank all of our listeners at Voices Changrong Star Radio FM 88.3 for listening to us. And thanks to Director Tracy Carter and Dan Crafton, Managing Editor Diane Gao, David Bird and Ali Ogden as well. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.